thank you.
Blog Talk Radio.
This is Nick Augustine here with attorney Mark Scroggins to present a special edition of our Texas Divorce and Family Law podcast to focus on school shootings. Today we are recording at the Collin County Courthouse with Judge Cynthia Wheelis. She's judge of the 417th District Court. We are also joined by Lieutenant Mitch Selman and Deputy Jessica Pond from the office of the Collin County Sheriff. So a few of the things that we're going to cover in our special episode today, a general outline of what does create a school shooter? Are there common traits among school shooters? Is there influence of media and technology and society we can wrap our heads around? Also, we'll talk about preventing school shootings as well as we can within the law and what procedures the laws already have in place, as well as what additional legal approaches might be helpful. We'll talk about programs that are in place to address alienated students, talk about school and juvenile programs to help students, and what additional programs might be helpful. Of course, there's always the subject of arming teachers and whether that's a viable solution to prevent school shootings. We'll discuss the authority of Texas independent school districts and the response to arming teachers in Texas ISDs. I'm going to turn this out over to Mark Scroggins to start our discussion today.
I just want to say thank you to all of y'all for being willing to come on the podcast and discuss this. And Judge, this is something that we talked about a little, and I think a little bit of an anomaly when it comes to some of this, because one, my daughter is now at the University of Texas, so I don't think as much, I'm not as affected by what happens in, you know, our grade schools, junior highs and high schools now. But additionally, I think I might be one of the few that's actually born and raised in Dallas or in Texas that really has never, you know, I've never hunted. I just never really shot guns much, with the exception of, you know, shooting skeet a couple of times, I think, when I was in college. So it's really an interesting topic for me, and scary, I think, to, you know, everybody out there. So one of the things that I was questioning is, what do you see coming through the as the juvenile court judge, what kind of things do you see that people should know about that we can help in identifying some of these folks really from an earlier area?
Well, thank you, Mark, for inviting me to be on your podcast, and I think it's important. Obviously important to all of us and our safety in the community to have lawyers such as yourself be interested and have enough character to bring this to the forefront for your clients and other community members. Just as a way of background, we have had 28 school shooter or school threateners to shoot up the school since Parkland High School shooting on February 14th.
Wow.
So we have been inundated with kids, but that is not to say that our law enforcement and our DA Greg Wheelis haven't been already very active in the prosecution of these types of offenses. In Texas, we have the luxury of having a specific education code provision for handling this type of threat, and it's 37.125 of the Texas Education Code, where if you threaten to shoot up a school and you have the ability or access to a weapon, then you could be prosecuted or will be prosecuted for a third-degree felony. If you threaten to shoot up the school but you do not have access to weapons, then you are prosecuted for a Class A misdemeanor. Our sheriff's office has been actively involved in this ever since Columbine. And I am not making, I'm not bragging on our law enforcement, but I am saying that if there are threats being made on social media, our sheriff's office has a unique program, and it's kind of tangential to the Crimes Against Children program. And our school shooters are falling roughly into three categories. One is the serious threat. They're posting on social media with specificity. They're not vague. They have time, place, and weapon. They have a plan in place. I am not a provider. I am not a mental health expert. But in my experience of 15 years on the bench, and before that doing juvenile associate judge work, I believe they are budding personality disorder problems. These are your Adam Lanzas, your Nicholas Cruz category.
Okay.
The second two categories fall under the general topic of bullying victims. Number one is your typical bullying victim who are now just saying something to try to scare someone, or potentially they're being gaslighted, and that's kind of a new area for people.
When you say they're being gaslighted, I'm sorry to interrupt.
No.
Can you explain that? Because I got to tell you, I'm not sure exactly what all that
right.
means.
So we see that a little bit in family law cases
right.
where someone says that you said something and you are kind of a manipulatable or vulnerable person. You might actually believe what they're saying you said.
Okay.
This happened on a school bus recently where a kid next to another a victim, our juvenile respondent ultimately, was told that he said something about shooting up a school. By the time they got to the UIL site, it was all over the bus and people were taunting him. You said you were going to shoot up school. So then the threat becomes a real prosecution and the kid's in our detention center. Now, we're taking everyone seriously. But what we found out is that that kid was being gaslighted in the bullying.
Wow.
His pervasive bullying included being told that he threatened to shoot up the school. So then the other bullying victim, though, is a little bit dangerous. They are ones that are pervasively bullied over time, and now they are controlled by their rage. So you put that guy in connection with the serious threat guy, and you've got a Columbine.
Okay.
That duo.
So let me ask something if I can real quick. So let's say that you get someone that is kind of like this 2B version that we were talking about, somebody that's been bullied over time, so they've just developed a rage and a hatred for everybody in that school that has not suffered the same disassociation really that they have. What steps can be taken to, I guess you can kind of see what, you can kind of see who they are and what they are when they come into the court system. What programs, or are there any programs that are in place to take someone like that to try to say, okay, what can we do to try to get this kid back on the right track and to, well, to get them back on the right track, to make them see all of a sudden there's a fork in the road and let's go down the right path instead of the wrong path.
Exactly. That is where we come in to see something, say something. And that's where law enforcement can sort that out.
Okay.
I believe that law enforcement of Collin County has incredible compassion and rational heads on their shoulders. They will tell me, I need you to release this child to his parents because he has special needs or whatever it is. But they have to prosecute in case there's something serious. So what I'm telling you is that I trust our law enforcement of this
sure.
county. And if you will just let law enforcement know and let us sort it out, I realize that that's not always a perfect system.
Sure.
But we're seeing, I believe that's what we're seeing with these 28 reports.
Well, and I think, Jessica, this kind of goes to something, and this is, I'm talking to Deputy Sheriff Pond. Is it all right if I call you Jessica?
Yes.
Thank
yes.
you. I think this kind of goes into something that we were talking about just before. I mean, my daughter is 20 now, and so she grew up having social media, but just kind of, you know, it was just getting started. It's not like these kids that are now born into it. And one of the things you were talking about is these kids having multiple social media kind of characters, for lack of a better way of putting it. They've got one that's meant for mom and dad to see.
Yes.
And then they've got one that's for everybody else to see. And I know my daughter mentioned something about that to me, you know, a friend of theirs that had, they've got their other Instagram account mm-hmm. that they post of, you know, all the crazy stuff that we do when we're in college. And I was really kind of taken aback, and I was a little embarrassed to realize how naive I am in that. But as a parent, what can a parent look for? How do we even go about finding out about these kind of things?
Take their phone is one of the easiest things. Most parents, most kids that have social media, letting them start social media way too early in age is a big contributing factor. They get news, they get fake news, they get false information, YouTube and learning things, and we sometimes get stuck in how we deal with certain things. And so to them, they get to see it from a social media standpoint. Well, this person is like me, and they did this, but there's not an alternate means to it. They create the fake alias, of course, to hide things from parents.
Sure.
And they do it in a sense that if we're not paying attention to our kids and we're not listening when they're having the conversations, and I'm not meaning eavesdropping and not giving your kid privacy. I'm just saying, oh, there was an issue with so-and-so today. What happened? And actually wanting to have that knowledge and speaking and just going back and forth with their kid about how their day went and, you know, did you hear about so-and-so? No, well, tell me about it. And that's how we get to figure out that the person that is bullied, that is isolated, if I can see that my child is maybe talking bad about that person or saying that he doesn't fit in, he's just not cool, he's whatever else, then we can take keys and we need to say something. Maybe a kid's not going to say something at that point, but if the parents start to listen, realize that saying something helps, those kids are going to follow in parents' footsteps. And
that's huge. That is huge. And that's, you know, I feel really blessed in that my ex-wife and I both were very much on the same page with that and always sat and talked with the kiddo. You know, hey, what's going on? Well, this happened. Are you okay? Is he okay? Do they have somebody to talk to? Do they have somebody that they can turn to in these types of situations? And then I look at, as a family lawyer who's been doing this for way too many years, I look at how often you see parents that are so caught up with, you know, trying to keep up with the Joneses or surpass the Joneses, which you're not going to really surpass one of the Joneses, at least here in Dallas area.
But I want them to keep up with technology because
right.
you can figure out a lot when there's right. stuff coming off and different apps coming in and how you log in as one and how you can switch user preferences and different things like that, and allowing parents to realize, oh, you tried to hide it, but I got it, and I know how to do it.
That
and
is great.
Trailing on to that, I
right.
do advocate stalking your kids.
Yeah.
And they will accept friend requests from, you know, obviously you're going to have to do a little bit of dishonest, having a name that is like on Instagram that maybe doesn't reflect who you are, not like at mom.
Sure.
You know.
At stalking mom.
At
well,
stalking
but there's
mom.
There's what? Also a bunch of different software out there that, like in the, you know, in the family law arena that we talk about, that hey, you can't use to, you know, figure out, look at keystrokes and all kinds of different, I'll call it spyware, but it's not actual spyware, to see what everybody is doing. So it sounds like that actually would be a pretty good idea as a parent to use. Let me ask one additional thing, because I'm realizing just how little I know about this. Are there programs at, you know, even grade school, middle school, high school level that are put on for parents of, hey, look, this is real. This is a real problem. It might not be with little Johnny or little Betty, your little angel that's so perfect, but hey, this is something you need to be aware of, and here are things that steps that you can take to avoid these types of situations. Are any of those, is there anything that is put on at that level?
Teaching parents to be their own detectives, I guess?
Well, or just even something to, my daughter graduated from Plano Senior. Okay, and I remember, you know, there was always the stuff at the beginning of the year, and there are always different things of going and meet the teacher, and you find out how the kids are going. And I found out, my kid can be a little lippy. I don't know where in the world she got that. Huge surprise. But it would seem to me that would be a perfect situation where the school could make an effort with law enforcement's help or with the judicial system's help.
We have some of some, and take it that we know that we are in a social media and we
mm-hmm.
are our phones, what, like 84%, I believe, that most of your internet usage and stuff is done through apps and everything that's on your phone. But there's a couple of different cities within Collin County and their school districts with the SROs that have an app or a social media type feed that is just for the school, and you can actually put in anonymous tips, letting people know.
Wow.
And I mean, so the media is, or the technology's got there for it. It's just having kids take it seriously and not to gaslight or not to make something that is of nothing, but to actually give the information. And even if they heard this, I mean, just fill us in, the SRO that's there that knows those kids, that works daily with them. They're going to be that true test of, I mean, that's the point of an SRO. It's somebody to talk to, somebody to come in and...
When you say SRO, and I'm sorry to interrupt.
School resource officer.
Okay. Just wanted to put that out there so everybody understands.
No,
I think we have a tendency to talk in acronyms because we use them all the time.
Yeah, right.
So that's a fantastic, just great information, because I believe that one of the issues that we have out there is you can have the greatest resources in the world, but if you don't know about it,
mm-hmm.
and when I say you, obviously, I mean the collective you,
right.
you know, then it doesn't do anything.
Right.
So
I have a bullying talk on cyberbullying and
mm-hmm.
sexting and all of that I give to middle schools and high schools and all of that, but the school district really has to invite us in. And
mm-hmm.
so we in law enforcement are here and ready and able and willing, but we do need to be invited. And I've spoken a lot at Lovejoy, I've spoken a lot at Plano, Frisco, but not so much in McKinney. So those are the kinds of areas that are required now under the new bullying law.
Mm-hmm.
They're required to bring in programs of this sort. They're required to have an anonymous reporting program. I think the thing is that people think, oh, they're just joking, or whatever it is.
I think sometimes parents
think that as well. They
yeah.
minimize.
Yeah, you don't want to believe it.
You don't want to believe it.
Right.
And I get that. However, we're in a new world now.
Right.
Where kids who are filled with rage are doing, you know, terrible, tragic things with their rage. One of the things that we're seeing, too, in some of our more serious cases are that they have actually, even as low as fourth grade, made threats against teachers, threats against principals. They're kids
wow.
that have low frustration tolerance levels, and they're probably doing some assaulting in the home, siblings and parents, but they're not being reported. We can help. That's what we do. In the juvenile justice system, we are about behavior monitoring. Don't be afraid to turn your kid in. It's over your head. If you've already tried counseling, and I will recommend certain specific counseling programs. So with your budding personality problem, and we don't have any personality disorder, we don't have any real mental health diagnosis before 18, so that's what we're dealing with too in law
right.
enforcement. We don't have those tests that say, you know, this person has a personality disorder. But they say that dialectical behavioral therapy, or DBT, is the only therapy that really truly works with that group. And then for adolescents, we know about cognitive behavioral therapy. If neither of those work and you're having offenses committed in your home or at school, I'm also advocating that teachers turn in their own victimization to law enforcement. I think so often they're talked out of it by their administrators. I think law enforcement is able to sort that through and determine, do we have a real threat or do we have a kid who's just crying out for some help, and we can do both of those.
What about the devices? When we talk about these threats, this is the tool, this
right.
phone I'm holding in my hand,
right.
and it's easy as a parent to say, well, if they're bullying you through your phone and through your social media, we're going to take the phone, put it up, you're not going to have access to it. Now you've got a kid who's got withdrawal symptoms from the phone, and if they're not responding and if they go silent, are they concerned that, what does that silence mean?
Right.
Or do we see kids who are, when we talk about the mental health aspects of it, where it's just, let's get away from devices and social media accounts. I mean, are they even allowed to have social media accounts on all the platforms as kids?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
We're getting no policing from Facebook or anyone else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can look at all the stuff that's going on with Facebook right now, and you can see
Wild West. Like five that'll have a Facebook or an Instagram. There's a dog that has an Instagram.
My
page.
Cat has one.
Okay.
Well,
yeah.
see, no, a Facebook
I mean,
page, but
so it can be creative at any point, whether or not it's just it's okay to put out a post saying kids taking a
sabbatical
from social media, won't be back on for this many weeks.
It's like their popularity though is the number of people they have on their page, and the things
yeah.
that made you cool or not wasn't the lunch table you sit at anymore, the sports you played, or whether your parents had the nice car you were getting dropped off in.
But a parent, law enforcement, judge, court and the other people that can be a victim of any of this, I don't care if they're not cool. Their safety is our biggest concern.
Sure.
The safety of them, the safety of school, and the safety of others that are there. The cool meter, it has no play with any
Isn't that one of the biggest messages to his parents to drill home to kids, that this too shall pass?
I think it's the hardest one to convince them of. It is the worst thing they've ever felt. So literally the worst feeling they've ever had in their life, and they believe it's going to last forever because of the way the adolescent brain develops.
Mm-hmm.
So we do have parents, though, who also think it's terrible to remove their social media. I think that is a greater problem, perhaps.
You have an awful lot of parents these days that don't parent, okay? You've got, you know, I think you have a lot of them that they look at it from the standpoint of they've got limited time with these kids, and what they want is to have, you know, just the picture-perfect Norman Rockwellian type of relationship with, you know, with Junior,
right,
there, instead of being a parent and say, no, we don't do that.
Right.
You know, no, we aren't going to do that. That's inappropriate, this kind of thing, because they don't want the discord or conflict,
right,
you know, in the limited time that they have. So you see, I think anyway, you see a combination of that, and then you have parents that are also trying to buy the affection of their kids, you know, and I have, well, Judge, you've seen it more than I have, you know, you see what the results of that are. So
right,
let's kind of shift gears for just a second. You talked a little bit about the bullying talk that you've given to a number of different school districts. What I'd like to know, what else is really in play? What programs are in place to address these alienated students?
The problem from my perspective is that these students that are alienated are the ones that are coming to my attention.
Right.
These victims are coming to our attention in law enforcement, and so we provide a lot of behavior modification. We provide regular cognitive behavioral therapy and all of that. What I don't think is happening are the bullies are not getting treated, and their parents are the very ones that are going to be the ones that are hard to speak to by the teachers. My sister is a teacher. One of her colleagues was told by a father that I have more degrees than you have. So she, you know, was just basically put down and dismissed. And I think that what we have is a very entitled parenting going on.
Right.
And so I don't even think they recognize the level that they're passing off to their children of disrespect.
Well, especially if Johnny is the one who's the popular kid, he's the starter on the football team,
sure,
and he's the one upstairs quietly sitting and doing his homework in his bedroom, but what you don't know is he's on his device and he's participating in ganging up on some other kid.
Right.
When a parent's like, you know, my kid is a star, we all have the sign out in front of our, you know, my kid plays football for the school and
yeah,
we're the best people on the block, and my kid's never been in trouble, but he's the one that's bullying.
Right.
So
you're
what?
Exactly right.
So what do we do about that? From a law enforcement perspective, it's one thing, but how do we
engage the kids? Get to know what they are doing. Get to know. I mean, you'll be able to see it just as well as you said. You're married, right?
If
yes. Your wife comes in and you know that she's had a hard day at work, you're going to say, probably shouldn't ask her about that. I'm not wait till tomorrow, right? It's the same for them. If they're at school and they start noticing, I mean, the SROs that are in there and the staff, the ISDs that work with the staff, even the staff, I mean, they are trained to recognize difference in the behavior, parents, just clues, all of those clues. And we don't just say, oh, well, yeah, he doesn't look like he's having a great day, and then walk on. We go and do something about it. We talk to them. We pull them aside. We figure out what's going to do, and we try to help come up with a solution. And then after that, it's stuck there. It's noted. It's told to the counselors. There's a process that it'll go to, and if there isn't a resolve and we can't get somewhere with it, and then it ends up in judge's court later on.
Right.
When it has to get to that point, if you can't get parents to get on board, and the ISD school resource office, the PDs, agencies, the sheriff's office, all of us working in connection, plans for all of this and making sure that the communication is a good line. I mean, they are in place and it's there. We just have to utilize them and we have to stay on our toes to see it. And then we actually have to do something with the information.
So then what, in any perfect world, okay, what could we do as parents? Okay.
To the school resource officer. They have access to that resource officer just as well as those students do.
What else could be done at the school level to reinforce this? Because I think what happens, and that's what I'd like to get into a little bit. Because I think what, you know, we're such a society of, you know, we want of immediacy, you know. I could sit here right now and I could, while we're doing this podcast, I could get on my phone and I could order to have, you know, a couple cases of Dasani water delivered to my house because I don't want to go to the grocery store after I get done with this because I need, you know, that kind of thing.
Right.
So I think we take this information in, and then unless it's something that we're going to utilize right now, I think it's very easy to have it just kind of dissipate. And so what can we do at the school level to make sure that this isn't just the, you know, the thing that you see in the school handbook and you look at once a year and you have to have signed that, yes, I read little Johnny's school handbook that he has to, you know, behave this way. What could we do even kind of in a grassroots type of movement to get the school districts to implement some additional programs or just the reaffirmation of what's actually there and can be utilized so that we aren't running into these, you know, it's more the exception rather than the rule of, boy, didn't see this coming, you know, that kind of thing where all these kids have seen that, oh, yeah, this kid's been troubled since, you know, kindergarten, you know. He's the one that nobody wanted to play with, you know. No one's playing tether ball with him because he was out there chasing down squirrels and trying to do stuff to him.
Right.
You know. So
that's absolutely right.
So what do we do? What can we do? I mean, as a community.
I think teachers need to be given more respect from not only just their principals, but also the parents. Mostly in our,
absolutely,
in our county of affluent parents and this immediacy, 24-hour news cycle.
Right.
What we want to be able to do is say, not just speak to the parents who are the parents of the bullying victim, because that tends to be what happens.
Right.
They're more afraid, I think, by virtue of the personality types of the parents of the bullies.
Right.
So be a parent who can be asked hard questions that make you feel defensive about your kid. Be the parent who says, okay, if I'm examining this and I don't want to have the next school shooter created because of my kid's bullying, be the parent who takes the bull by the horns and gets their kid into treatment. And it's almost all private care in our county because, again, we're affluent. Even our kids in the juvenile detention center have, you know, private psychiatrists and their appointments. They furlough to their appointments. That's just unheard of in other, you know, more Title I, less affluent counties. So we have a lot at our disposal. We just have to really engage it. A lot of times in a divorce situation, which, you know, we've got 52-53% divorce rate in our county.
Right.
We just need to be kind to the people who are trying to co-parent. Maybe they don't get along. Let's all be willing to be forgiving of the bully's parents as much as we are the victim's parents. Because you've got both sides, and if we want to have an environment where we get the bullies to stop bullying, we're going to have to stop being so unforgiving of the parents of the bullies.
It's a big morals and values message.
Yeah.
Really is. And that's a difficult thing. I mean, you get into so many different issues along those lines. I mean, you know, I've sat there and had conversations about it. It amazes me the things that people will say on social media where A, they don't have, you know, they don't know the person that they're actually saying something about.
Right.
They don't have any idea about the circumstances
associated
with it. And God forbid it's actually on a specific news issue or something. The amount of uneducated statements that are made, you know, and people will just, you know, I advise my clients, as you know, all the time, don't press send. You know, do not.
It's
do
his
not
favorite
do that.
Thing. There should be Mark Scroggins bumper stickers on all the cars that say don't press send.
Yeah. So, but it's amazing the kind of stuff that people will post out there, and I don't know how you how we kind of draw that back in as a society. I wish that people would.
Right. I think we have to watch ourselves, and it is a morals and values. We can't just say we check a box, we take our kids to church, boom, check, we're done.
It doesn't end there.
Say the
it doesn't end in the parking lot.
We are kind to other human beings.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And if we hear about a Wheelis child being unkind to others, we're going to be just as upset about that as if you failed something. You know, you fail a class.
Let me ask one thing where we're just talking about the student who is the bully, because I'm going to guess that this is a reason that parents of the bully get concerned. Everybody is so concerned about wanting to make sure that their child has opportunities. Okay, whether that is in a trade craft or whether that's going to college and subsequent education or not. So I think parents get terrified about the idea of having something on his or her record, you know, and being concerned that Texas Tech or, UT or SMU, whatever, is not going to let little Johnny in because he's got something on his record. So from that standpoint, and, you know, we see kids that are juveniles that get charged as adults all the time. So I think when we start talking about, you know, don't be afraid to talk to the police about stuff that's going on with your kid. Can you talk a little bit about what happens with a kid that gets in the system, so to speak, from a juvenile, and what kind of rehab efforts are there? And then actually what happens to their juvenile record? So if there's a way, I'm kind of going at, if there's a way to put these folks' minds at ease, I think that would go a long way towards being helpful.
I think they can, and law enforcement will probably add to this after I speak, because it's from their perspective too. We do not believe that children are mini adults. We have the juvenile system based on the adolescent brain development. The logic there is that they are not making a moral, well planned out, then executed plan, that they're just impulsively stealing that iPad because it's there, that sort of behavior. So what we have in the juvenile system is a kind of a complicated system of sealing records. One level is restricted access, so only law enforcement gets to see your record. And then the next level is sealing, where even we can't see the records after they're sealed. So, but on some offenses, so like a felony offense, and you can see why logically this is true, because it might be a safety issue to the community.
Of course.
They have to wait until they're 18 and stayed out of trouble, or 19 on a more serious offense. So there are a complicated layer. There are layers of complicated statutes for sealing records, but it's really based on risk to the community and safety to the community. And I don't know how law enforcement might view that.
When we take a kid into custody, and we're very fortunate to have a court like this, that it's not just big hammer. So
right.
And we do our best on our end to determine if the child is a threat, is it a mistake, or is it intentional? Is this going to be a danger down the road, or is it just something he made a mistake? It was an impulsive act.
Right.
And we relay that to the judge, and she takes that into consideration. So that's the benefit not only to the parent, but the kid down the road.
Right.
And so that can play to the sealing of the records, and it all goes down to intent. And is there going to be any problems in the future?
I've even had this sheriff's office recommend deferred prosecution, which is a level of probation that at the end of it, they haven't been fully adjudicated. So, I mean,
that's
we
fantastic.
Have, I think, out of all the counties in Texas, 254, we're the best sheriff's office.
I would agree.
We're very, very lucky.
I like that one, too. We're very lucky. I think, too, his times have changed. Before, if you caught a kid, and I'm not talking an active shooter or a shooter scenario with guns, but if you were out in to a point that you caught a juvenile doing something they shouldn't be doing, it was that point of, no, go ahead and get on the phone and call your mom and dad, because no matter what, I could take you to juvie, but I know mom and dad are going to have something planned for you that's going to be worse than, you know,
right.
Probably not worse, but that was the last resort. And they would think, I mean, because When I was a kid, if somebody said they were going to call my mom, nope, take me on in now. Let's just But and nowadays, if you were out there and you were to say that, or you were to say underage drinking or something like that, and you made them pour out bill or their beer, and you made them call their parents to come pick them up, you have this part now where the parent is so upset that you poured out their kid's beer.
Yes.
And or want to be mad, but then you're saving those things. So it's a hard line that you have to walk in with law enforcement and give that discretion if you see it, but being able to give the discretion with a judge in a more formal means, I mean, that still helps, but it's changed.
Well, let me ask this. So where I am with where I live right now, if I had a child that was going to, that was still in school, we would feed into Plano West. Okay. So if I'm a parent that's got a kid that's going to feed into Plano West, and these things are all concerning to me, and I want to make sure that all of my fellow parents of students know that, hey, these are the resources that are out there, and these are really important things that we all need to look at. And we don't need to create, you know, an Orwellian 1984 community of, you know, or you know, Soviet Union communism of spying on your neighbor. But what could we go to, say, the faculty at Plano West and say, hey, I think this would be really good. When can we put something like this into place? When can this be mentioned? When can we bring someone in to talk? What would you suggest, since y'all are the ones that are really on the ground floor on all of this, what suggestions could we make to the school districts to say, hey,
they're doing a lot right now in Collin County. I mean, they already have most of what you're talking about in place. You go on their website, and there's parent portals for this. There's
right.
a Remind Me app here. There's a I'm sending out masks. You know, this has changed for the day. I'm going to send everybody that has, you know, a phone number registered for this child a quick text about whatever's going down. There's tons of things that are already there, and there's already ways of you need to contact the school resource office. Then here's the number. Guidance counselor is the number. You go on to that page, and then it pulls down any of the other information that you need with contacts and how to get a hold of them. We just need the parents to listen, to pay attention to the kids, actually do something with the information.
Mm-hmm. At the end of the day, it all boils down to being proactive.
Right.
Through communication and through relationships.
Mm-hmm.
At every level.
Right.
Sure.
From the parent level, from the SRO level, the teachers, the counselors, everybody.
Right.
Listening to these kids and what they have to say and not being afraid to act on it, no matter what, good or bad. And if they do good, you praise them. If there's something that sends up any red flags, you report it, and then we're gonna act on it.
Right.
We take no threats, just small threats, we just blow it off. All of it. We are serious on all of them. And then we make sure we do our investigation, we
right.
make our recommendations to the court.
Right.
We know that everybody's not perfect.
Right.
I mean, we live in a world of everybody's not perfect. I have a 7-year-old, and sometimes playground stories get to be a little bit too much. but I listen every day before she goes off. I don't say be a good girl or do any of these because I think we learn from our mistakes, and I think that is how we become better. And I just tell her to think about it and make good choices. That's what I want her to do, because everything in life is a choice. You just have to know which one, you know, the better outcome, the better consequences. If I do this, what's going to happen if I don't? So,
this is a good segue, too. When we talk about good choices, we talked about choices from school, law enforcement, kids, parents. Everyone can make all the best choices, but we can't control the people who don't make the good choices. And when the people who don't make the good choices bring a problem, we need to be ready to respond. We've had a lot in the news lately about responses by law enforcement to threats, and a lot of the discussion of one of the things that has been talked about is teachers in Texas ISDs having firearms. And it's something that I think a lot of people who have moved to Collin County might not be aware of how Texas ISDs operate, what independent school districts are, and how many do have teachers who are armed, And, you know, we have signs out in front. We were talking a little bit before we started today about some of those things. What should parents and people listening know?
So one of the things I want to say before we move on to that topic is I think there are some holes. There are some giant holes in
right.
what school districts should do. One of the holes is that they've typically not been able to do anything with reports of bullying. That is, now that they have the responsibility. Before, they didn't want a report of some random bullying. You know, every night they'd be getting in, you know, they said this about me on Facebook, or someone, you know, a bystander can do a lot more reporting. So I think the kids need to be reporting bullying to the schools, whether it's bullying of teachers or other students. I think the teachers need to be turning in students for bullying that they're seeing.
Mm-hmm.
Because
absolutely.
I think all of us are shutting up and we're letting the bullies rule the school, period. Moving on to your issue, Melissa ISD has its own, I think in Texas we have the luxury of having teachers who are quite comfortable, who have grown up with guns and have gun training, etc. And with respect to our independent school districts, they are indeed that, independent. They get to make their own rules, and they have their own, Prosper ISD has its own police department. Salina ISD has its own police department. I think Farmersville has its own, community has its own PD. I think that's maybe a different topic, but it flows of the same nature of the independent school districts. So, you know, you have teachers of all varieties, teachers that are comfortable, teachers that are not comfortable. I think it probably will just have to be handled in each school district's comfort zone. But I also think that the way this issue shapes up is more based on getting the people who are enraged properly reported for crimes, threats, terroristic threats, education code threats to exhibit a firearm, threats to blow up a school. I think that going into a background check is far more important maybe than even mental health, addressing mental health. Because what we need to do is we need to have law enforcement know about these enraged individuals. By hook or by crook, that's where I think it's all going to be. We're all going to be victims until we get all these threats taken seriously by fellow schoolmates, teachers, principals.
And if you have a process to, you know, we were talking before about your son or daughter worrying about their permanent record and all this.
Yeah.
You know, when we have, it sounds to me like a similar thing to putting someone on a list of concern. As long as there's a procedure and a process mm-hmm. in place to handle that, that shouldn't ultimately be the concern.
Agreed.
It seems to me.
Agreed.
Well, this is a, you know, I'm sure we could sit here and talk about this for hours, and then it goes into so many different areas. I want to thank each of y'all for taking the time out of your very busy schedules to spend a little time with me today and with Nick and talking about this. This is an area that, you know, I know it scares me, so I'm thinking if it scares me, it scares a lot of people. And I think that, you know, we live in such a great country and we are so blessed with so many wonderful opportunities that it absolutely breaks my heart to see these kind of, you know, issues pop up and these horrible offenses and the just mindless hurt of other individuals. So, you know, by God, if there's a way for us to make it stop, however that is, you know, I don't have the answer. But boy, I sure would like to find it. And if I could be, you know, if we can get.
I think that's a subject that we're all very in tune to trying to make it work and having stuff in place. And I know it's a top priority for the sheriff, especially with what has been going on. So much so that, I mean, I printed out our, we got a memo from the sheriff after the Parkland shooting about our response and what we do and how we do things. And so much that it affected him of you've trained for this, he's provided this, these are his expectations of us to engage, to stop the threat, to make it to where, you know, the other students, we're not waiting, we're going. And I mean, he puts in here that you're expected to do your duty and to uphold the oath that you're here to protect the citizens of Collin County.
See, and that is and I would be more than happy to put that up, on our website if you would like, or put it in a social media post, because I think it's unfortunate that law enforcement has been vilified by the few and it has permeated the thoughts of many. So I think seeing the general populace seeing something like that, and they realize that, hey, law enforcement are the good guys, and they're here to help us. It's just like, you know, the folks down, got this close to my heart, down in Austin, you know, that found that guy and, you know, were trying to get into the car when he blew himself up.
Yeah.
I mean, they were going to sacrifice their own lives to try to protect the folks of Travis County and Austin, Texas. And, you know, my daughter's down there. Good Lord. I mean, that's close to home. People don't see enough of that. And it just, you know, this is another one of those things that break my heart. I guess I'm getting a little old and sentimental and stuff. But, God, I wish that people would understand that and that, you know, the folks in blue are here to help and to be a part of the solution, not to, you know, have people point the finger and vilify. And I think that y'all have been done such an injustice, especially with everything that y'all bring to the table, and I'm very appreciative of that.
We're going to be there to help somebody, whether they like us or not. We'll be there when they call.
Yeah, and who else does that?
No.
You know, so who else does that? I can tell you, it's not me. You hit me with a stick once, and I'm like, you're on your own.
Judges have that same ability, but not law enforcement.
That's right.
That's right.
That's right.
We can hold them in contempt, and then they have to lock them up.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you what, guys. I know that we have gotten to the end of our time. Did any of y'all have any one parting comment that you'd like to get across for people to think about?
Oh, I appreciate you bringing this out in the open. It's glad to talk to you. Appreciate it, Mark.
You're certainly welcome, and I hope that we can do a follow-up on this sometime.
Agreed. Parents, examine your kids honestly, whether it hurts, the good, the bad, the ugly.
Take the criticism.
Yeah.
Make good choices.
There you go. And that is, you know, what I would say over and over again. I mean, I feel blessed today that I've got a, you know, relationship with my daughter where she tells me, you know, everything that's going on. And sometimes I'm just kind of like, oh, my God, you know. But I'm really glad. And it's amazing how many people don't do that. So, folks out there, talk to your kids. And remember, that is the most important thing. Nick, thank
Absolutely.
You for taking care of everything. With
of course.
Today.
Again, this has been Nick Augustine in a special episode with Mark Scroggins of Scroggins Legal with the office in Plano. Also offices in Dallas. Phone number 469-626-5220. We want to extend a big thank you to Collin County Judge of the 417th, Judge Cynthia Wheelis. Also, Lieutenant Mark Selman and Deputy Jessica Pond from the Office of the Collin County Sheriff. Again, for questions about Texas divorce or family law, be in touch with Scroggins Legal, 469-626-5220. That's all we have for today. We thank you all for sharing these podcasts, as you may find them on your social media feeds, because you just never know whose friend, neighbor, or that person you don't even know that well on Facebook is experiencing all these questions that we talk about and needs to find and share this information. So it takes a village, and to all the villagers, have a good day.
Thank you.
Thanks, guys.